Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Pretty damn good week of sports so far. We had the MLB season starting off and had probably the best NCAA men's championship game that I've ever seen. I mean, have you seen any other game better than that besides maybe the NC State game against Houston in 83?
The Villanova game was pretty good back in 85. But, yeah, I get your point. It was a pretty good game. The Louisville Duke game was pretty good a number of years ago, but yeah, I mean, awfully good game. I mean, you know, look, the end of the day, what a great team, and man, did Villanova come to play, and it was really, you know, interesting, especially obviously the last 4 seconds, but the whole game was pretty damn good, and they seemed to be really on top of their game, and I think arguably, you know, by the seeding, they beat four top 10 teams throughout the tournament, which is no team has ever done before. Or I think the last team to do it was Villanova.
And you know, I take back every bad word I ever said about Villanova. I mean, they really ran through this tournament, and you know, what a great last game. I mean, I was stuck in the library and I saw the game about 8 minutes left. It was, you know, like a 5-point game, and I decided to turn it on. Villanova stretched the lead to 10 points, and I was kind of disappointed. You know, I was looking for a photo finish, and, you know, a few minutes left, North Carolina just wouldn't go away. And one guy that really stood out to me was Marcus Paige of North Carolina. I mean, he makes a big three with about 2 minutes left to cut the lead. And, you know, when he missed that layup, I was standing under the basket, rips the ball away from the Villanova player, and throws the ball up. I don't even think he saw the hoop, and made, you know, a huge bucket. And then that shot with 5 seconds left, which will pretty much not be remembered because of what happened next. But I got to tip my cap to Marcus Paige and the great career he had at North Carolina. But on the flip side, I mean, what a brilliant play by Jay Wright, the coach for Villanova. I mean, Archie Diacono busting that ball off the court, knew that he was going to get double teamed, and laid it back to Chris Jenkins, who had a wide open look. And whether he makes it or not, you know, that was awesome that he did, but that was an unbelievable play with 5 seconds left. I think that's one of the more tough positions in a basketball game. You know, when you're in the bonus and that little time is left, you really can't, you know, face up and try to, you know, get in the guy's face, because if you foul him, you know, free throws are not a sure thing, but I mean, you don't want to foul guys bringing the ball up the court, because point guard shooting guards are usually pretty good, you know, free throw shooters. So, I mean, that was just an unbelievable play. And, you know, what a last 30 seconds of that game. It was unreal. The double clutch three by Marcus Paige, and then, you know, one of the greatest shots in NCAA tournament history by Chris Jenkins. It was unbelievable, and I remember they were showing clips of NC State with that buzzer beater against Houston, and it just a lot of goosebumps. Coach Galvano, it was unbelievable. And I think what was more unbelievable was how great Villanova shot the ball through that the entire tournament. I think they put up a clip, you know, around 55 or 60%, and they shot 58.3% in the championship game. I mean, that's kind of a sick number for an entire team to shoot that great for an entire game.
It was unbelievable. They were unbelievably great. I mean, you know, look, they were well coached. They played well, and they basically, I mean, look, it was a close game. It turned out to be a close game, but they were basically in control almost the entire tournament. And again, I take back all the bad things I said about him. I mean, I always liked Villanova, but it was just like, you know, you get tired of getting disappointed by liking him. But did you happen to hear Marcus Page's press conference and his speech afterwards?
I didn't, but I'm sure it's a very humble and awesome young man. I'm sure it was pretty cool.
Well, it was unbelievable. You know, he was supposed to be a big, huge star, and he did not have a very good year this year. You know, again, it happened. Look, it happens to anybody. But he said that he appreciated all his time at North Carolina. He acknowledged he didn't have a very good year. And he said last night was the best night of his life, and this was the best year of his career because of the guys he's around and the whole thing. And he said he didn't want to take he never wants to take the jersey off. And of course, he'll take it off. He took it off for the last time now, but that was pretty cool. And, you know, after you just lost, he really came out and, you know, unlike Cam Newton after the Super Bowl, but I mean, he came out and was a real gentleman about the whole thing. And it was pretty cool. And, you know, that's what
I like the sports trip. I thought Roy Williams also had a great speech. I mean, you can see all the emotion. And what it's like, you know, to not only be in that kind of game, but, you know, to have the high of hitting a game-tying three-pointer and the low of, you know, getting it taken away from you in the next 5 seconds. I mean, one of the greatest coaches, I think, in college basketball history, Roy Williams, is definitely up there. And, you know, just those two teams, I mean, the class acts on both sides. And I think it was really what the tournament needed. Because I remember after those first couple days, there were some unbelievable games, and I think the tournament kind of went into a lull. And after that first weekend, there wasn't really many great games. You know, looking at the Final Four, I mean, two huge blowouts, even the Elite Eight. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the better games was Kansas Villanova, and I really didn't think that was super great either.
You know, a lot of the games were just, I mean, you know, a lot of the games were just like over. If you went to the bathroom, the game was already over because the team was down by 40. I mean, it was amazing what happened. How about the way that Villanova destroyed Oklahoma, though, on Saturday? How about that game?
I mean, that was one of the more unbelievable things I've ever seen, and I was not happy about it at all. I mean, if I'm at least going to watch a game, I'd like it to be somewhat close, and Oklahoma almost getting their score doubled. It was nothing short of embarrassing. And I know that I don't think the game was as far away as the 40 points that showed on the scoreboard, but, you know, it was tough to watch. And especially, you know, and such a great player in Buddy Hield, you know, really didn't come to play. And nobody on that Oklahoma team did. I mean, that's why the game ended up so poorly. I mean, I think their leading scorer had 12 points. And Villanova started clicking on all cylinders, went on a huge run. And like I mentioned before, I mean, the percentage with their shooting the rock, it is going to be tough to beat them, and they showed that they just ran through this tournament.
Well, no, I mean, at the end of the day, Benenjay from Syracuse and Buddy Hield, they didn't show up to play, and that's unfortunate for them because they'll be remembered for not showing up to play in the biggest moment of their careers. I mean, Buddy Hield was like hiding and didn't want to take the shot. I mean, you know, the announcers kept saying, you got to take more shots. And he didn't want to. It's like he didn't want to shoot the ball. All year round, he's shooting 30 shots a game. Now he doesn't want to shoot. And Benenjay from Syracuse, he didn't want to step up either. And, of course, that's why both games turned out to be a blowout. And, yay, it was a good tournament. And at least it ended with a great game that was phenomenal. You know, just you could not ask for a better championship game. Except maybe the last 5 points, maybe the score would have stayed a few points lower, it might have been better. But it was just really a great game. And, you know, great coaching. And, again, classy North Carolina, Marcus Page and Roy Williams. So that was great. Anyways, this is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We're going to stop out here for a break. But make sure, whenever you miss a show, go to libertytalk.fm and you can download The Sporting Edge as well as The Bubba Show. We just passed 200,000 downloads a month. We want to get you part of it. And also follow me at Twitter at Bubba Average Joe. We'll be back after the break. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We'll be right back.
Don't finish this last bite. You don't get my soul, do you?
Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And Xander, you know, we've had a couple of rounds in the Masters, but you know, it's amazing about the Masters. They start advertising for it like in January, like around the Super Bowl. You start seeing the commercials. I mean, it is by far, my opinion, the best golf tournament that there is, because A, you know, it's hard to see it, and Amen Corner, and just all the things that have happened. And you, did you know that that's not even a PGA sanctioned event? Did you know that?
I did not know that. It's very interesting, though. But I agree with you. The Masters, and I'm not even one to be a huge and avid golf watcher, but the Masters is that one time a year where I will very rarely leave my couch other than to be a real person if the Masters is on TV, which is pretty much all day for 4 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know what, it's the one course. You know, I haven't gone play golf for a while, but I do like it, and it's the one course I would pay a lot of money to play there, because it is unbelievable. The whole setting is unbelievable, and the whole tournament. And you know, they don't, you know, they had that problem years ago with the sex issue, and, you know, having women play and being members, and what Hootie said is, screw you, we don't want advertising, we'll take care of it ourselves, we won't have commercials this year. So, you know, they are a breed apart, and but it is an unbelievable tournament. And so what do you think? Do you think that that Spieth is going to be a player again this year? Was last year an anomaly? What's your views of what's going on?
Well, you know what, Spieth is right up there for me, and I don't think last year was an anomaly. I think he's, you know, probably that next great player in the game. I think you could probably label him as that already. I know he hasn't been playing great this year, but you know what? He's the type of athlete to me that seems like he's got that killer instinct, and I think that's what you look for. You know, a guy like Tiger Woods, you know, I know he hasn't won a major in almost a decade, but and he was one of those guys who really transcended sport in the game of golf. And, you know, like guys like him, guys like Michael Jordan, I think they've got that extra notch. And I think I've seen some of that from Jordan Spieth. I mean, he's been putting a lot of big spots in his young career, and very rarely has he not stepped up to the plate. So I think this weekend comes down to Phil and Jordan. You know, I think Phil Mickelson, I think you could probably say over the past 10 years, it's probably been the most successful at the Masters. You know, you look at his finishes, you look at the way he shoots. I think this comes down to the wire with Phil and Spieth, and I think Spieth takes it, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you look at these guys in the top 10, you know, Bubba, I mean, always up there. Jason Day, you know, is recently climbing up the boards. I think Rory, there's a lot of great guys up there, but for me, it comes down to Spieth and Mickelson, and I think it's going to be a hell of a Sunday.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, look, it's golf is a major. You know, everyday golf is okay, but the majors are exciting. And, you know, you can see so many changes in emotion as they go through the golf course. And, you know, so the four majors, obviously, in golf are good. And, of course, this is, in my opinion, and I think you agree, is the best major there is. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Spieth, you know, it's sad to see that, you know, Tiger is done. And we commented on it last year. You know, they keep saying he's coming back. You know, I don't think he's ever coming back. I just don't. His body just won't take it anymore. And, you know, I think that's that, and that's the end. But, you know, Rory is good, and Spieth is good, and Phil is old and good. And, of course, unfortunately, our buddy Freddie Couples will miss the Masters with a bad back. You know, it's a shame. I mean, he's fun to watch, and he's got an interesting swing. But, you know, Day, as you said, Day is just, you know, he's unbelievable, and the things he's been through over the last couple of years with passing out and with the dizziness and still being able to compete. You know, hey, we'll see how it plays out, but I do agree that to me, it would come down to Spieth and maybe Mickelson. But I think, you know, one thing about, you know, as you get older, playing those four rounds is a lot tougher too. You know, there's a lot of wear and tear on your body. You know what I mean?
Right, and that's my only worry about Phil. But I mean, you know, him and Ricky Fowler are both in the top 20 in strokes gained, tee to green, and in putting. He's got 15 top 10s the last 21 years here. And I don't know, he's 46 years old, but something about it just tells me that he's going to be right there neck and neck on Sunday, and I wouldn't be surprised if he took the title because he's just had so much success here.
Oh, no, listen, it's great to watch, and it's just, as I said, as you get older, and of course, you know who else got involved in the major golf tournaments too, though, is the Daily Fantasy Sports. they don't miss anything, baby. They got everything involved, and they're grabbing their share of everything. What do you think about the Daily Fantasy on golf?
I mean, I think it's great. It's kind of, to me, golf, you know, that kind of parallels like a UFC, a big fight card. I mean, there's not a ton of games, but you pick some golfers and you add up scores. I think it's awesome. I mean, it's a fun way to watch. You know, I'm in a little pool with my buddies. We each took six guys. I mean, it's kind of a similar setup. And, you know, I think it's great. It's just another way to put action on sports. And, you know, I think it makes it more fun because you can take multiple guys instead of, you know, betting on one guy. You have an odd, or, you know, a guy has odds, you know, he's a 3-1 dog, you know, stuff like that. I mean, this makes it more fun because you get to pick multiple guys, add up scores. You happen to get lucky with a couple value picks that, you know, make the cut and shoot pretty well, and you'd be sitting pretty. But I think it's great. I mean, I love Daily Fantasy. So pretty much any sport that I like to watch, I like to pair it up with Daily Fantasy because it just makes it that much more fun.
I agree. I like to play it. It's what we do on the show. I mean, this, the Sporting Edge, is about sports investing. So, you know, I think it's great. Look at the more. I'm sorry. I understand why they took it off of college sports, but I'm sad that they did. Right. I mean, you know, it's the right decision, but from my standpoint of a guy who wants to play it, it isn't the right decision. But of course, I know that overall it is the right decision. So, you know, I was sorry to see it go, and it's interesting, but I think that it's always going to be, you know, a part of it. I think it's only going to get bigger. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't get bigger. I mean, it's really pretty young. I mean, I think FanDuel, correct me if I'm wrong, started in, I think, around 2009 or 2010.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
And it's just gotten almost exponentially bigger. And it seems like we kind of passed a little bit of that road bump that we were at a few months ago with all the regulatory things and the law. I know one of the sites I play on, Fantasy Draft, they were shut down for a little bit and came back. So I think it just does keep getting bigger because I think people enjoy it. And, you know, like we talked about, fantasy football and fantasy baseball, you know, going for a whole year, I mean, it can get a little cumbersome. And I think Daily Fantasy is something that is fresh, and it's new every day, so, you know, I love it, and I think it gets bigger because I don't see any reason why it wouldn't.
You know, I agree. I think, I'm wondering if they're ever going to get it back in New York. They still are not allowed to play in New York, and obviously a huge market. So, you know, I don't know what the holdup is there, and I don't know why New York is being such a pain in the ass about it because, you know, almost every other state allows it, and you know what's the big deal? I mean, you know, guys are going to figure out a way to play it, and it's the same thing with poker. You know, I mean, just because they made a mistake and didn't get enough of their cut off at the beginning, so they want to make it illegal. I mean, that to me is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, typical government for you. But like you said, if people want to play, they're going to find a way, and I don't think they'll have really any trouble doing that.
No, and I think it's, you know, of course, and of course, the best sport for fantasy is now because, you know, not only can you play it once a day, but some days you can play it twice a day, and you've got it, you know, you've got 162 games a year, you know, for a lot of teams. So, again, that always is fun for me because I enjoy playing it, and I think it's a lot of fun trying to beat the opponent and try to, you know, handicap, you know, the actual individual player, which, you know, when you're handicapping a sport or a player, it's a little bit different because you're not really necessarily concerned about the team. You're concerned about how that player performs for that team. But it's all good. It'll be fun. And, of course, we're going to step out of here for break. This is the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander, and we want to make sure you check out thesportingedge.net as well as if you ever miss an episode, go to libertytalk.fm. You can get the Bubba Show and you can get the Sporting Edge there as well as while you're at, can you have something convenient, go to bubbatrading.com and check out some of the programs we're offering. We think you'll find a lot of great investing opportunities in both because on this show and on the Bubba Show, we try to help the average guy learn how to better invest his or her money in what they want to invest in, and we always try to give you up the leg up and the edge. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We will be back right after the break. The Sporting Edge.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And of course, Xander, you know we don't very rarely, we very rarely ever cover women's sports here, but Connecticut set an all sports record. And again, they've won another national championship. And this senior class has won all four national championships, the first school to ever do that. And obviously, if you're too young to remember, but you go back to UCLA, I mean, they won everything, but they never won four in a row. And here you go. You've got one class from freshman to senior won the national championship every year as they pummeled everybody. And it's really amazing at how dominant they are, and nobody can ever catch up to them. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Connecticut women's basketball is one of the most interesting and unbelievable things, I think, in sports history. I mean, you think about, you know, how the good the top teams are and what factories, you know, teams like Kentucky and, you know, men's basketball have always been so good. But to be that one team that is separated so far from the pack, you know, similar to Golden State in the NBA this year, you know, to throw one out there. But, I mean, you look at how long UConn's been doing it, and it's unbelievable. I mean, Gino Auriemma, I think you have to say he's the most successful coach in women's basketball history, if not, you know, basketball history. I mean, maybe comparing him to John Wooden and his championships, but I mean, it's truly unbelievable. And it's unbelievable how they can, you know, consistently be that much better than everybody else.
It is amazing. And, you know, you very rarely see that. Of course, it is still, although it's old, it's still relatively a new sport. And of course, the best players want to go to the best school. And, you know, until you start seeing some separation, and until you start seeing more money at the next level, it's going to probably continue to be that way. And then as we move on into the NBA, the NBA is pretty much, you know, set up now. I mean, pretty much the seeding is almost done, and we're going to start to see, you know, the end here. We're coming into the last weekend and the home stretcher. And, you know, the question is will Golden State be able to sweep it out and get there? You know, that's obviously very interesting. And, you know, I don't know. And when it comes down to the playoffs, you know, San Antonio, they're awfully good, my boy. So, you know, how do you see it playing out here now that we're going to be into the playoffs?
Well, you know, I haven't really changed up much of, you know, what I thought and what I said before. I think this, you know, this playoffs comes down to a San Antonio Golden State Western Conference final. But with that being said, I would not be too surprised if I saw Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Finals. I think they pose a lot of matchup problems. You know, having, you know, arguably two of the top maybe five players in the NBA with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, I think they're a very dangerous team, a team that can't be overlooked. And I think that San Antonio and Golden State know that. And I don't think if they're going to lose to them, but I wouldn't be surprised. But I, like I said, I do think the champion of the NBA comes out of the West. I don't think any team in the East can even hold, you know, Golden State or San Antonio's water. Maybe Cleveland. Cleveland is the only team, I think, with a legitimate possible shot, you know, with LeBron, Kyrie being healthy, which is something that we didn't see last year. I mean, last year I think LeBron James was the MVP of the NBA Finals, even though Cleveland lost. And he's going to need some more help if they want to bring it back this year. And even with the extra help, I just don't think that team's good enough. But I think we kind of beaten a dead horse with the NBA playoffs. I think it'll be much more interesting once we start watching them and we can see what happens. And I wanted to take a little time out talking about NBA, talking and talk about the most recent Hall of Fame class inductees. We saw the other day, it's official that Allen Iverson, Shaquille O'Neal, and Yao Ming are all going to be in the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about those three guys and what they meant to me. You know, growing up, you know, these guys were at the top of the league. And I was very early on into watching basketball. And I can distinctly remember, you know, Shaquille O'Neal being the most dominant force in the league on the Lakers in the early 2000s. You know, Allen Iverson being one of the smaller players in the league and never backing down to a challenge, no matter how difficult he was to coach. And, you know, Yao Ming being a transcendent guy who really, I think, brought the NBA into a great spotlight in China. What were your thoughts on those three guys getting inducted?
Well, I mean, warranted, but I'm an anti-Iverson guy. I think he's just a gangster thug. I was never a fan because he did not set the right example. And unfortunately, a guy like him could have been, he could have turned around many other youngsters' lives if he'd have been a mensch or a gentleman about life, but he wasn't. And so Shaquille O'Neal was, I always liked Shaquille, and I think he's just a nice guy. And Yao Ming, of course, you said it. You couldn't say it any better. He was a great ambassador of the game, and he certainly brought, you know, a whole new market into it. And, you know, so I think performance-wise, Yao Ming might not be as deserving as a player, but as a package, he probably is. Certainly Shaquille O'Neal was, you know, dominant since he was probably in diapers. And I mean, there wasn't many better guards, or still isn't many better guards than Allen Iverson. But again, I have to look at the entire package, and I think that, you know, I always hope that athletes like Michael Jordan at the championship game this week said, you know, I owe it all to North Carolina. They gave me my start, and if I didn't make that shot, and if they didn't do it for me, I'd just be just another guy. And again, whether he really meant it or not, it doesn't matter. He said it, and it looked like he meant it, and he was just a gentleman. And I mean, even to Craig Sager, where, you know, Craig Sager's been sick, and he was just, you know, asking him how he is on air, which is, you know, look, it takes a lot. It takes a man. And, you know, Michael Jordan has changed a lot of lives for the positive, and I just think Allen Iverson does not. And that, to me, is always a problem. But I think they're all, deservedly so, they're all in the Hall of Fame, and that is, I guess, what really counts, because they are the best in the craft for what they are.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you a little bit about Allen Iverson. I think he definitely could have handled himself a little more graciously during his time in the NBA. But one thing I have to look at, I watched an interview recently, I think it was about a week ago, on ESPN. And, you know, I really saw, you know, through what he said, you know, he basically said, I didn't appear to do everything right, and I didn't do everything right, but, you know, I love my teammates, I love my coaches, I love the fans. And that was something I always thought he had a hard time expressing to people, because I think he was a little more prone to be part of that lifestyle that, you know, you really don't want kids associating with. But I think at the end of the day, looking back at it now, seems like a guy who is really grateful for all that the game of basketball and the NBA has given him. And I can respect that. It seems that, you know, he's definitely grown up more than his time in the NBA, and has come to peace with the fact that, you know, he owes a lot of people some thank yous, and he seemed very gracious about it. So that's one thing I have to give back to him. But like I said, those three guys were some of the most fun players to watch that I've ever seen. And you know, I don't know if we'll ever see a big man as dominant as Shaquille O'Neal, because I think you can make an argument that he might have been the best center of all time.
No, that argument I can never make. He wasn't, in my opinion, wasn't even close to the best of all time. But you know, that could be a story for another day. But I can't say that there's anybody better than Bill Russell, as much as I hate to say that. But and Will Chamberlain was awfully good. And I mean, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or Lou Alcindor, as he used to be known. So, you know, listen, Shaquille was good, but he, in my eyes, he can't even carry their jockstrap. I mean, he didn't have the complete game that these other guys had. But, you know.
No, that's why we get two different opinions.
That's exactly right. That's what makes opinions, right? I mean, that's exactly it. But, again, you know, we all look in our time, and from what we saw, and in your time, he was probably the best. But, again, there was others, you know, long before. And, you know, I think the only clear-cut guy that everybody always agrees on that was the best at the craft is Michael Jordan.
Yep.
You know,
I do agree with that.
You know, I mean, again, you can look at all the sports, you can look at all the players, but the one name that universally comes up is in basketball is Michael Jordan, but he comes up in across sports, and I think still Jack Nicklaus in golf. You know, we talked a little bit about Masters. I mean, you know, everybody, Tiger's going to pass Jack easy, and, well, guess what? Tiger may never play again, and he's never going to pass him now. So, interesting as we look, but there's a few names that get recognized among the top, but again, there's whether he was coached, however he got there, nobody handles people better than Michael Jordan. And again, I saw it at the championship game when he was there, and I commend him for that. And I wish all athletes would have more of that attitude, because I do think that they have a big effect on the kids. And you know, it is about the kids and about the reputations that they see. And that's kind of, we all emulate somebody or something, and I think that it's important to be able to look up to somebody who's really strong, and that is what I like about Jordan. But this is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander, and of course, we want to remind you that if you ever miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm, and you can be one of the 200,000, but we're looking to get to 300,000 people who download this show every month. We enjoy doing it, and we're always here to help, and we love handicapping and trying to put you in the best position for your investing dollar. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We will be back right after the break. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So, Xander, we had opening week in baseball and some decent games, some good performances, and, of course, my man Big Poppy. I say he has a big year, and he goes out with a bang, and, of course, he did hit a home run on the second opening day because the first one gets snowed out. But, you know, I haven't seen anything of major surprise yet, other than everybody had the flu, and somebody said on Major League Baseball on Tuesday that it should be mandatory that everybody gets a flu shot because everybody was sick. Baumgartner was sick in his opening. Greinke was sick. Sonny Gray didn't even go out and pitch on the opening day. But any major surprise, anything that caught your eye in the first week?
Well, I think the most surprising thing, I mean, we're talking about the flu, was Zach Greinke looked pretty awful in that first start with the Diamondbacks. I mean, they showed that he didn't have a start like that entire last year, giving up 6 earned runs. He ended up giving up 7 runs, 3 homers, and 4 innings pitched. And, you know, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the concept of overreactions in Major League Baseball. And I knew this was going to happen. It happens every year. But you get through opening day, and the next morning you see all these ridiculous headlines about people basically guessing what the season is going to be like after the first day. So if it say that Zach Greinke isn't his old self, I think it's pretty ridiculous. You know, he had a bad start.
I agree.
It happens to be the first.
I agree. I could agree with you more. I mean, that is, but you know that is part of the business, that everybody overreacts. And it's, look at, you don't remember this because you weren't born yet, but there was a guy that played for the Chicago Cubs named Tuffy Rhodes. Okay. Tuffy Rhodes, we used to do our draft right after opening day, you know, the fantasy that I'm in. Tuffy Rhodes had 3 homers on opening day, so somebody grabbed him, like, in the second round. He didn't hit another homer the rest of the year. So, you know, it is always a series of overreaction. And, of course, you know, you saw some performances, you saw some really good, you saw some bad, but you're going to always, you know, it's 162 games, and that's the best part about it is you're going to see a lot of performances. I mean, Madison Baumgartner walked more guys in the first five hitters than he walked in any one game last year. Okay? Think about that.
Yeah, so unbelievable stuff. But let's go on the flip side. How good did Clayton Kershaw look on opening night? I mean, his stuff was electric. And then I've been reading stuff that he added a changeup, which looked ridiculous. I mean, the guy has one of the best fastball, curveball, slider combos in Major League Baseball. And adding a changeup just makes him sound that much scarier to face. But boy, did he look good against the Padres.
Listen, we both agree that he was awesome and that he was always awesome. And I just, you know, my only problem with him, and it's not really a problem with him, it's my only problem is that for some reason his stuff is not as good when he gets to the playoffs. And I don't understand why, but, you know, there's nobody. Look at from a duration standpoint, from durability and everything, I mean, the guy goes out. You could pencil him in every start for almost seven innings, if not more. It's almost an automatic. Seven innings. So he's great. I mean, he's certainly of Hall of Fame caliber, and he's certainly worth, in today's market, he's certainly worth every penny he got. But again, at some point, you got to win the World Series. To make your career whole in any sport, you got to win the championship at some point. Don't you agree?
Right. I do agree. And that's why, you know, games 1 through 162 don't mean much to me for Clayton Kershaw, because he's proven that, you know, he right now I compare him almost, I think he's kind of the Peyton Manning of the regular season. I mean, you look at, in terms of comparing him to other players and other pitchers, has anybody been more consistent and more dominant than him over the past 7 or 8 years? I mean, I don't even think you could put anybody in the same category. I know Max Scherzer's had a great stretch, but he's really only doing that for 3 or 4 years, you know. Clayton Kershaw has, you know, got 3 Cy Youngs in the past, I think, 7 years, and is, you know, an awesome pitcher. But I'd really love to see him take it to the next level and get that World Series championship ring, because I think he did a great job in last year's postseason, but it didn't really matter because they got knocked out. But when they were, you know, facing elimination, he went out there and he threw up a solid performance. But I think when you think of Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs, you think about 2 years ago against the Cardinals when he gave up that 3-run bomb to Matt Adams in a huge spot in the NLDS. And, you know, that's one thing. That's going to be a monkey hanging over his back until the Dodgers win something, which I hope they do eventually, because, you know, I like the Dodgers. I think they're good. I think this would be the year, I think. If they were going to do something, it might be it, because they really weren't heavy favorites, I think, for anything. I mean, I think they're going to have a huge division battle with the Giants. I don't think the Dodgers are as good as last year, but they still have a very good team, and I think a lot of that is going to hinge on what Scott Kazmir is able to do as the number two starter over there.
And what do you think about Stroman from Toronto? What an outing he put up, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the guys who we said to look out for this year, and he is going to be a huge key to that rotation, because when you lose a guy like David Price, who, you know, is probably in that top tier of pitchers, you know, if you put Clayton Kershaw in that very top tier, I mean, David Price is unbelievable. So that's why guys like Marcus Stroman and all the other guys in that Blue Jays rotation are really going to need to step up this year, because you can only hit your way so far. I mean, you look at World Series champions, they got pitching and they got defense, and they got a great lineup. But if you don't have pitching and defense, I mean, you're not going to slug your way, because, you know, eventually hitting gets put down. And we've seen that almost every year.
Listen, that goes without saying, and that's always the case. That's why the over and unders are always so low in the playoffs. So Jake Arrieta, you know, I pitched a two-hitter. You know, I was, and again, as you said, on the other hand with Zach Greinke, you know, or Arrieta, it was the opposite. He had a great game. I didn't think he's going to have a very good year this year, but he certainly, I mean, he did pitch a two-hitter in opening night at the Angels. I can't take that away from him. He was awfully good. What'd you think?
Yeah, he looked like he hadn't missed a beat. I mean, you know, if you remember that second half of last year, he was the best pitcher in the majors by far, and pitched well at the start of the playoffs. But, I mean, that last start against the Mets, just everything went wrong for him. And after that homer by David Murphy, it was, you know, goodbye, see you later. But I was glad to see it as a huge Cubs fan. He looked electric. It looked like we hadn't stopped playing last year's regular season. And I hope it continues. But like you said, Games 1 through 162, if you're a huge playoff contender, don't mean much. You got to win in October.
Yeah, I mean, look, I hope I hope he's great. You know, I'm a Cub fan too, so I'm hoping that he's as good as he looked. I was just concerned, but, you know, maybe he's finally, you know, everybody matures and becomes a player, and, you know, he's had a lot of problems over the years, but maybe this is, maybe it's now his time, and I hope so for our sake, for the Cubby's sake, and of course, Cole Hamels went out and pitched a nice game, too, on opening day. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of disappointing. Felix Hernandez, the Seattle Mariners gave up one hit and lost, and I was actually watching that game. I was in our locker room, and it was 2-0, and, you know, he had an error, a couple of walks, and then a hit, and it was 3-2, and Cole Hamels came out and, you know, finished the business, and the Rangers ended up winning. But, I mean, that was quite an opening game, and, two of the greatest pitchers, I think, over the past decade, King Felix and Cole Hamels. I mean, those guys have been so consistent, and it was really cool seeing him pitch. And I think I must say, the big cat, King Felix, looked a little slimmer on the mound and didn't look like he lost the beat except for that one inning.
Yeah, no, it's funny, you know, that, you know, he looks great, and I think he's kind of wearing down, but he did look unbelievable on opening day. You know, a lot of things, but I'll give you the one guy to watch this year, Trevor Story from Colorado, okay? That's the guy to watch, shortstop. He's supposed to be a backup, and of course the starter's hurt. Opening day hits a home run, second game hits a home run, and he's off to the races. So, shortstop Trevor Story from the Colorado Rockies. He's in Arizona. He's still hitting home runs. So keep an eye on him, and keep an eye on the Sporting Edge, because we enjoy bringing this to you, and we're going to try to start putting up some lineups as soon as we get everything done, and we're going to make this to be the best. We want this to be the best sports program on air, because we enjoy doing it, and it's a lot of fun. Make sure if you ever miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm and check it out. Be one of the now over 200,000 people downloading the program. We want to have you as part of our team as we continue to build a successful winning program, because again, we're very good handicappers as well. That'll do it for today and for the weekend. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Thank you so much for being here. Enjoy the Masters. We'll see you back here next weekend. The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.